Hello again, and welcome back for another fun-filled hour with the Functional Nerds. I am Patrick Hester, author, inconsistent blogger, tongue-tied blogger, and all-around podcast dude.
And I'm John Anilio, musician, blogger, and fan of the Irish bouzouki. It's time to take a look at the stuff we found interesting this week.
I just wanted to make you say bouzouki.
Yeah, no, and that's the way you spell it. And when I teach my students, I have my Irish bouzouki in class with us sometimes. And I'm like, yeah, this is a bouzouki. And, a bazooka? I don't think I've ever said the word bouzouki without someone saying bazooka right after it. I mean, adults too, but, you know, mostly kids.
Gotcha. Well, every time I see or read anything from you about the Irish bouzouki, I'm reminded of the cheese shop sketch from Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever heard that one?
No, I haven't, actually. That's one I have not
familiar. It's the guy goes into the cheese shop. He's looking for some cheese, and it's the worst cheese shop in the world because they don't actually have any cheese. Mm-hmm. And there's a bouzouki player in the background playing this song. And it just keeps going on and on. And as this guy is asking for all these different cheeses, do you have this one? No. Do you have this one? No. Do you have any cheese at all? Yes. We have no. I want to guess, and he just keeps going and going, and he names every cheese imaginable, every cheese you could possibly ever have thought of in your life, and this bouzouki music is still going. And finally, he just turns around and he says, "Shut that effing bouzouki music off!" And the music just dies. Anyway.
Sweet.
Before we get into headlines and stuff, I did want to ask you something because it's been nagging at me since last week, and I think that this will be a good question to kind of get into John Anilio's psyche a little bit.
Okay.
And help us understand who you are and where you come from. So imagine this scenario. You're in your car. You're driving home.
Mm-hmm.
Elton John's Tiny Dancer comes on the radio.
Okay.
Do you sing it out loud right there in full view of everyone in the cars around you?
I probably would. What was the name of that movie that was Almost Famous?
Almost Famous. On the bus? Yes.
Yeah. I'm actually a big fan of the Ben Folds does a cover of Tiny Dancer that's real good. So I'm pretty into that version too.
I think a lot of people have covered Tiny Dancer.
Yeah, it's a good one. A friend of mine would sing instead of saying Tiny Dancer, she would sing Tony Danza.
Yes, that's from Friends.
Oh, very good. Well, there you go. Well, yeah. That makes it not so cool anymore.
Well, no, I mean that's you've heard of Kiss the Sky?
Mm-hmm.
It's a misheard lyric.
Right.
And so one of the famously misheard lyrics is Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so they made that famous on Friends. But anyway, I digress completely. That was just something a little off topic that I decided to throw in there.
Yeah, sure.
Let's talk about some technology headlines.
All right, let's do it.
There has been a survey done about Macs and PCs in the workplace. And what they found is that Macs cost notably less to support versus a Windows PC. So Macs are often the black sheep of many enterprise environments. IT departments hate them. I mean, it's been that way for me forever, and I do marketing, so I use Macs all the time, but IT departments never want to support them. But it's kind of changing because Macs are slowly working their way into business environments, and IT departments are finding that even though they have a higher upfront price than a PC, that the Macs over time are costing them less to keep up and do help desk and support for. So there was a company that did a survey, and they did this of IT professionals in large enterprise environments. And these are companies that have a mix of both Macs and PCs. And based on that survey, they overwhelmingly agreed that the Macs do cost less than PCs to support. And that comes from you don't have to do as many help desk calls. You don't have to do as much antivirus and firewall and all this kind of stuff. So it's kind of interesting that you pay more for the Mac up front, but over time, the PC actually costs you more.
That's not so surprising to me. That makes us sound like horrible, Mac fanboys, which I mean we are, but,
sure.
You know, it doesn't surprise me because, you know, I have two Macintoshes, and one, as I mentioned last time, is an eMac that's right. like 6 years old, and I've never really had any big problems with it. You know, it's been, you know, running fine for this long. When I had a PC that was 6 years old, it felt 6 years old. You know, I had problems with it all the time.
Right.
And even, you know, it's funny because in the school that I work at, you know, we use PCs, and it's funny because, you know, Macs used to be sort of education, like big in education, and not in my district, at least anyway. And we have all these music programs that run in the computer lab now. That's kind of a new thing. And I'm telling you, they crash. I'll bring a class in there to work on an assignment, like through this one program called Music Ace. And Patrick, I tell you, last week I had the program crashed on within 20 computers, 7 of the computers crashed during one period. Like, it's crazy. And I, you know, it's very frustrating because I know that wouldn't be happening like if it was a Macintosh, but I would love it if they would go, because there was a big music technology push in my district, and which,
well, that's awesome, actually.
Yeah, well, it is. And it's funny because I think music teachers, when you're dealing with education, with other teachers, I think music teachers tend to be, we're kind of a younger staff overall, and I think music teachers tend to be a little more technologically savvy than your average teacher. I think it just kind of goes with the territory of being a musician. You know, you like gadgets and machines a lot of times because that kind of goes along with it. So when we were sort of budgeting and what we were getting, we begged for like to get Macs, you know, either if not in the lab, at least like sort of a cart with laptops, or, you know, like a little station or something. And we fought hard and lost.
Yeah. Well, of course
they did not, the tech department did not want to have anything to do with them. And I think really what it comes down to with IT departments and tech departments, at least from my experience, is that they don't, because they're not familiar with using something outside of a PC, they don't know how to support it.
Right. And well, if they can't take it apart and do something to it, if they can't, you know, just go down to Mushkin or wherever else and pick up some parts, you know, to change out a video card or do this or do that, then they don't want any part of it.
Yeah. And I think they're very, very weary of that. You know, like they just don't want to deal with being put in a situation where they don't know how to fix it. And I can understand that. But the funny thing is that if we use them, and maybe that's part of it too, is they, you know, want to, and I like all the people in our tech department, so it's not a slam on them, but it's, you know, maybe
job security.
Maybe they need to justify their job, because I will tell you that just about every music teacher in my district has a MacBook, like their own personal ones,
right,
that we use all the time, you know, and we don't need their help with it, you know, and you know, they don't like that. I mean, we're technically not allowed to use them. Like, we're not allowed to use our own personal computers. But we all do anyway, you know. It's, well, because I want to use GarageBand.
Sure.
You know, and there is a PC version of it, but...
Ew.
Yeah, there's one called... it's called Mixcraft. And it's okay. It's a GarageBand clone for the PC. And it's all right, you know. But, you know, it doesn't work like GarageBand does. And anyway. But this doesn't surprise me, and I wish, you know, more... I wish in education they would get back to the Macintoshes, because I think, you know, there's so much. Just thinking about it with like a kid using it, like a kid can figure out how to use GarageBand.
Oh, yeah. Know? Oh, and iMovie and iDVD and all that stuff.
And all of those programs, all the iLife suite, you know, I love just how they are so connected, you know, and you can dump your garage, you know, you can record something in GarageBand and then easily get it going in iMovie and do a little video, and, you know,
sure.
So I mean, just to me, it's real seamless going from one thing to the other. Like, I've done a couple of videos that I've edited in iMovie, and I know nothing about video editing, and I have very little interest in doing it. I've only done it because I wanted like a couple of videos to put up on my site, and it was a piece of cake. I mean, I literally figured out how to do it with futzing with it for like an hour.
Right. Yep.
And you know, I didn't even read the manual or anything. I just did it, you know. And I think for a kid to have that, I think it's just, it makes it, you know, such a smooth experience, and it's pretty to look at too. I mean, like the screen is just much more appealing, and the user interface is much more appealing.
Well, yeah, and I mean, something. I had a side gig where this company asked me to produce a video for them. I'd never done that before. You know, I didn't know what I was going to do or how I was going to do it, but I knew I could on the Mac. So I totally took the gig, and I ended up building them a video, a marketing video, using iMovie that ended up on YouTube.
Sweet.
And, you know, they distributed it around to all their clients. It was for a particular program that they had developed. They are a it's kind of hard to explain. They do team building exercises and corporate events, that kind of stuff. And they had a new program for, like, HR departments. And they needed this video. And they come to me and they're like, you know, we can't do it. I said, I'll do it. You know, I'll put it together. And I packed up my iMac in its handy dandy box, took my podcasting microphone with me, went to their office and had them record voiceovers in GarageBand. Mm-hmm. And then I brought it all home and I put the video together, snapped the GarageBand soundtrack essentially on the movie. Boom, I'm all done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. It took a little bit longer than boom, but I mean, you get the point. It's like I was able to do something that probably other people would need something like, what's that big suite of movie stuff?
Final Cut.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking of. You know, I was able to do something kind of cool, kind of quick, down and dirty using GarageBand and iMovie that probably someone else would have used Final Cut Studio for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it happened really quick. I have a question or two for you.
Sure.
Not to get into too much personal details, is this a private school or a public school?
It's a public school.
It is a public school with mm-hmm. a music program.
Well, yeah. As of now, we do. I'm in New Jersey, where there's a fairly healthy music program. But we are getting, I don't really want to get too much into it, but essentially, the governor of New Jersey is slashing,
of course,
you know, funds to education.
Yep.
So there's going to be a lot of teachers out of work come next school year because. Yeah. Lots of stuff is getting cut. So as of now, the music program in my district is safe, but you know, that could change, but I don't think it's going to, as of now, unless some really drastic things happen. But
and knock on wood, you know, nothing's going to happen, but I you know, I was just curious because you know, when I was in high school, I took piano.
Mm-hmm.
Was fairly good at it, probably could have done something with it, but of course they cut the music program.
Right.
And you know, my music teacher ended up being a substitute English teacher.
Right.
And I would see her from time to time, and she would be, you know, oh, you need to be playing, you need to be practicing. And I would look her in the eye and say, you know, my mom's a bartender, we don't have a piano, there's no friggin' way mm-hmm. for me to practice piano. And you know, it wasn't till 6 or 7 or 8 years after high school, you know, that I picked up a guitar and started playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of a pet peeve of mine. I hate that the first thing that gets cut when there are budget cuts and stuff is the arts programs and the music programs.
Generally, I mean, other things are getting cut first. Like whole programs aren't necessarily getting cut, but they're, you know, it's essentially, you know, all non-tenure teachers are going to go and, you know, you know, it's kind of a scary time in New Jersey for that, because it's pretty much statewide right now, and it's not great, but at least right now, the music program in my district is very strong, and is kind of I guess like a selling point of the district. It's something that they're very proud of. So it wouldn't be something that they would cut lightly, you know? So I think, you know, they're
gotcha.
Gonna, you know, go about it in other ways first. But in New Jersey, music is a big part of the public school still.
That's awesome. So
it is awesome. Exciting. It's not like that everywhere. It's not like that in California, which is insanity when you think about what California is supposed to represent.
Yeah.
You
know,
years ago, my wife and I had considered moving out to California, and I was like, you know, I won't be able to get a job though. So that's a problem. So,
well, it's funny because you always think, you know, wherever home is, you always think that home does everything better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, for most of my life, home was California. Mm-hmm. And when I was forced to move from California to Tennessee for a job, you know, I get out of the state and suddenly I realize home kind of sucks.
Of course, yeah.
You know, California wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. You know, there was so many other cool things going on in the world. It's like, you know, my God, there are better cities to live in. Mm-hmm. You know, you move to Tennessee and you know, people don't lock their car doors. They don't roll their windows up. They don't have the things that lock onto their steering wheels. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is all stuff that I grew up with in California. You know, if you didn't put the little boot thing on your steering wheel, your car was going to get stolen.
The club.
And you know, so you move away and it's like, you know, what the hell was I thinking? And so now, I mean, I don't think you could pay me enough money to move to California.
Yeah.
I have friends in California who are in what were traditionally well-paying jobs and industries, and they can't find work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in my hometown and in the surrounding areas, it's all agriculture, and they're looking at, you know, 18% to 25% unemployment because the friggin' state government turned the water off to the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, don't get me started on California. California sucks.
All right. Well, let's move on. Let's do that.
Let's. Another thing I wanted to talk about. Piracy.
Yes.
You got your eye patch on?
I do, yeah.
So the people who create content, and usually when I say that, I mean just, you know, people in Hollywood, the big movie companies and, you know, the Viacoms of the world who are suing YouTube for $1 billion for copyright infringement. These people who don't like it when other people rip off their content and distribute it on the internet are kind of upset because they have called these people pirates for a very long time. They've used the word piracy and pirates a lot. But now they're thinking that they may have actually helped to lend to the pirating community by labeling them something that's kind of sexy. There is a International Chamber of Commerce, and they did a study that argued that 1.2 million jobs could be lost in Europe as a result of the piracy and the copyright infringement by 2015. And the head of the International Actors Federation is basically saying that it's because of the word piracy. Because to her, piracy is something adventurous. It makes you think about Johnny Depp, you know, and everybody kind of wants to be the gay pirate from Pirates of the Caribbean. But by saying pirate and piracy, they've you know, it's like the South Park episode. Cartman thinks that being a pirate is this big adventure, you know, and you're just going to go off and be on a ship with your buddies singing and you know, doing all this really cool stuff. And so they kind of feel like labeling this as piracy has made people want to do it more and be a part of it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of crap, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't think that has anything to do with it. I mean, it's I get where they're coming from with it, but it's, you know, the reason why people take – there was I think it's the author's name is Don Tapscott. He was a co-author on Wikinomics, but I could be confusing with someone else. He wrote a book called Growing Up Digital, essentially about the generation that has been, I guess anybody sort of 25 and under, about how in their whole life they've basically been able to get, you know,
right,
whatever they want
yes,
from
yes.
the internet for free. And what that it's sort of creating an interesting generation, because people older than that, or an older generation, will look at that as stealing.
Yes.
And the young, the generation under 25 does not look at that as stealing. And should they look at it as stealing even? And it's an interesting question, because I think anybody older would say that, but is it, I mean, look, this is a big topic that, you know, there's a lot of points of view on, but by making a younger generation, by constantly trying to guilt them, you know, trying to make them feel guilty and saying like, you're stealing. What that does, it sort of brings in a question of morality, is that they're not going to stop doing it, you know? So I think things need to change about the way that, you know, that we label things, because if you're constantly telling somebody that they're bad, but, you know, but they don't think it's bad, then things that are really bad and criminal maybe seem less severe. And, you know, he brought up Don Tapp, I believe it's Don Tapscott. I could be totally missed, you know, thinking of someone else, but he's written a couple of books and about the topic, about, you know, the younger generation and what it means to steal or to not steal. And,
right. I've heard other people talk about this too.
Yeah. I think that's a more important question to ask, rather than should we not call them pirates? You know, it's a topic that I'm very interested in, because I think I mentioned last time, you know, I put all my music out as Creative Commons.
Right. And, yep.
I don't think that anybody should be able to just get anything that they want. You know, if someone wants to control the rights to their creative product, then they should. You know, like if Metallica doesn't want you to download their songs for free, they have that right, and that's fine. You know, but
they don't want you to download it for pay either.
Yeah, well, it's if they, you know, that's their right.
And just so you know, I just heard your wife laughing.
Yeah, I think she's she has the headphones on and is watching something. She just thinks I'm really funny, and she's laughing all the time at all these.
I thought it was me
that I'd say.
Yeah. Nah, she's, welcome to the world of podcasting.
Yeah, isn't this the nerd podcast? There's a girl in one of the houses of of one of the nerds. He's not a nerd. he's sired children as well.
Yeah,
this guy should get that guy out of there. Anyway, no. I totally lost my train of thought with that.
Not only that, you totally lost your cred too. So
yeah, I know. I've been thinking about that. It's I've been thinking about how in doing this podcast, it'll probably reveal that I'm not that much of a nerd, really.
And, you know, a music nerd.
I'm a music nerd. I think
you're
a music nerd. Yeah, that is also really like science fiction, but I'm not like your typical like sci-fi nerd, and I love sci-fi nerds. You know, all my friends online are sci-fi nerds, and I am too. But I'm not your typical. But
we were talking about online piracy. You were talking about, you know, the kids and teaching them about stealing. You know, that kind of stuff.
Well, it's because I think there is great value. And two of the things when I was reading through the show notes this week, I wanted to, in addition to the Don Tapscott book, there's a couple of sources that I think people, if you're interested in this at all, this question of you know, piracy or of, you know, copyright or Creative Commons, a couple of sources that that everyone should check out. If you haven't yet, you should. There's anything that Lawrence Lessig has written, you should definitely read. But in particular, he wrote a book called Remix. I think it was called The Remix Culture, or maybe it's just called Remix. And are you familiar with Lawrence Lessig's work?
No, not at all.
He's I think he's actually in Washington now, but he was at Stanford for years, and he is a lawyer and a law professor who has done a lot of work in terms of wanting to modify copyright law, about how our copyright laws are broken and how they are not relevant to today, and how they need to be changed. And Creative Commons, he's a big, I mean, he may have really even been one of the people who helped create Creative Commons, if I'm remembering correctly, about how, the world has changed and we need to change with it because, you know, everybody can't be infringing copyright all the time, which from what's going on, I mean, if you just look at a mashup on YouTube, that's copyright infringement. But is it really? I mean, should someone go to jail for that? Because they you know, had the Muppets sing Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, but dude, that's copyright infringement.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is at work, you know, we use a regular old web host for a lot of stuff that we do. And we have an internal website, what we call an intranet. And that's where employees can go. You have to be logged in to see content. You have to be logged in to get access to anything. And on that site, we post user manuals and we post things that we build. You know, a lot of times I will build walkthroughs and stuff like that for the IT department. I'll take screenshots, you know, put something together and spit out a PDF and give it to them that they can put up there. We also would put installers for the software that we have user licenses for, just to make it easier for the IT department to install stuff. Anyway, the point of that little story is that we received an email from the web host telling us that we were in violation of their terms of service because we were illegally distributing copyrighted material. We couldn't figure out what the hell they were talking about. So the IT director and myself sat down and we got on a conference call with someone there who informed us that the user manuals, we did not have permission to put them up there in PDF form, that we the walkthroughs had screenshots of software and that the screenshots were copyrighted. And they made us take all that stuff down. Otherwise, they were going to kick us off and cancel our account. Now, that in my mind is copyright Nazism running rampant.
Sure.
You know, I mean, that's ridiculous. We have the licenses for the software. You know, we have enough licenses to cover all our users. We're putting the information up there for the users of the software that we have licensed, and we have this, you know, little web host telling us that we're in violation of copyright.
Yeah. Well,
come
that's,
on.
That, yeah. That's
ridiculous.
What, yeah. I think you would really get a lot out of some of what Lawrence Lessig has written, because that's essentially the kind of thing that he's talking about. I mean, in addition to a lot of other stuff, but about how, come on, this needs to change. You know, all of this stuff is not copyright infringement.
Now, I agree with you on kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm incredibly young, much, much younger than you.
Okay.
And I may be pulling your leg there. But I know a lot of younger folks via Twitter, via the online games I've played, like World of Warcraft. And I do think there is a different way of thinking there. Almost like everything should just be available to anyone, anytime. And I admit that sometimes I feel the same way. You know, I think about when we had four channels.
Mm-hmm.
I remember four channels.
Sure.
You know, you essentially had ABC, NBC, CBS, and a local independent station that played reruns of I Love Lucy and Benny Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was all free. I mean, you know, it was just coming over your airwaves. And then cable came along and you paid for cable. And now you've got satellite. And now you've got DVDs and you've got iTunes and you've got Hulu that wants to go to a paid subscription. I know you're a big Hulu guy.
I am, yeah.
And they want to go to a paid subscription because they don't want to give it away for free anymore. Well, my point is you give it away for free, you know, Monday through Sunday, between 7 p.m. And 10 p.m. Mountain Standard Time every night. You know, so why isn't it free when you go online?
Because I think the technology has moved so quickly, I think it's just, you know, there were business models in place that, you know, aren't as relevant as they once were. And I think...
Sure. You know, well, I mean, that's
trying to figure this stuff out is really what it comes down to.
And that's what the newspapers are going through, the same thing. They can't figure it out now. You know, I mean, the online world has changed everything.
Yeah, I think there's no, you know, I think you hear this kind of thing talked about quite a bit, and some people will be very, you know, hard line either way. And I don't think there is really an easy answer to it. But I would like certain things. Like I really like Hulu. I also have a Roku player.
Right.
And
yep.
I'm dying to have Hulu on that Roku player, but it's, you know, not there. And I know why it's not there, but it's like, all right, like I can watch, you know, I can watch a show on my laptop, but if I wanted to watch it on the Roku player, it's not going to happen. Why? Like what's, I know why, I guess it's just like, they don't want to, they think they're going to be, robbing from their actual views, you know, like in, you know, when it's a first, you know, shown TV show.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I guess with something like Hulu, they need to be able to make more money with the ads on Hulu. I mean, you only see a couple of ads on Hulu, and they're often very, they're almost, a lot of them are for charities and things like that. So I imagine, you know, the rates compared to TV, you know, your standard showing TV are very low, because it's all like this charity kind of donate to this, you know.
Sure.
You know,
and they are still trying to figure it out. I mean, we know that.
Yeah.
But two interesting things for you. One, they are negotiating with Hulu to put that on the iPad.
Okay.
So that's one thing. Two, I don't have the, is it the Roku box?
Mm-hmm.
I have the TiVo.
Which, and you have the Netflix streaming.
Streaming, yes. So the Netflix, I can watch it on the computer. Mm-hmm. I can stop the show, go downstairs, turn on the TV, and resume playing.
Yeah, I wonder if you could do that with the Roku player too. I imagine you might be able to, actually. I mean, the cool thing about the Roku player is there are I have all that Netflix content up there, which is getting better. You know, it's more limited than I'd like it to be. I'd like to see everything on the Netflix, and I think Netflix would like to see everything on the streaming too.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of other kind of interesting things that you can watch on the Roku. There, I think they've gotten up to like 10 other channels, they call them. Like there's like the Netflix channel, and like you can listen to Pandora through the Roku player, and you can a lot of different things. But there's there's Revision 3 has all their shows up there now, and that's a separate channel. And so there's a lot of really interesting content on there, and I really like it. I don't have a DVR or a TiVo, so you know, to me, I get a lot of stuff like that, and I like, you know, sort of that combination of Hulu and the Roku player, and you know, I don't watch a ton of TV, or I don't really have a lot of time to watch. So when I do watch, it's nice that I can actually just sit down and either on my laptop or on the Roku player, like watch something right. that I really want to watch
yeah.
and just watch it. I hope they figure out how to make money on it, because I would like to see it just get integrated even better, you know. But you know, I don't know. We could probably talk about this forever.
We could, but, and I just want to say, I know what I was going to say. TiVo, mm-hmm. you were just talking about the different content that they have on there. One of the things that does bug me about their streaming Netflix. And I mentioned this in my other podcast, my solo podcast, but I haven't mentioned it here, I don't think. But a friend of mine was talking about The Greatest American Hero.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that show?
Yes.
Rest in peace, Mr. Robert Culp.
I know.
Who just passed away.
I saw that on Twitter yesterday, yeah.
But he was mentioning it, and I thought to myself, my gosh, I haven't watched that show probably since it aired.
Yeah,
and I loved that show when it was on, so I decided to grab it off of Netflix. Well, the pilot isn't available for streaming.
I've seen not with that, but I've seen that with some of the other. It seems like with the older TV series, they do that. Where I saw that with the original, like the original Battlestar Galactica, they have that up for streaming. A couple of the episodes are disc only.
Right. Yes.
And that
bugs the crap out of me. Why?
That's kind of rare. It seems like they only have that with a couple of like the older ones, because I haven't seen that really with any of the newer TV shows.
Well, and you don't see a lot of really new TV shows on there. I mean, I was very shocked and delighted to see 30 Rock, because a lot of people had told me that I should be watching 30 Rock, and I haven't watched it because Alec Baldwin is one of those guys that just creeps me out and I can't stand him. But I like him in that. It's very different. It's a hilarious show. And they have Spartacus. That's how I've been watching Spartacus, because it's on Stars and I don't have Stars. But they've had those, you know, brand new on there. But a lot of other stuff, I mean, I struggle to find like new movies on there. I'm surprised when I do.
Yeah, they don't have a lot. What I would really like to see on the streaming, which they're really lacking, is the music, is like the concerts. If you go through the DVDs, there's tons of these concert DVDs. And I mean, that's the reason I got Netflix to begin with, was that I would never bought a lot of DVDs. I always felt like DVDs were overpriced for what I did. You know, you'd spend $20 on a movie and you'd watch it once, and to me that was too much to spend. So I always felt that way with concerts too, because I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to watch this concert like once. Maybe I'll watch it again in a year. I still don't really want to spend $20, but I would always see these concert DVDs in the store and just want to buy them, because I just would really want to see them. And, you know, I've gone through Netflix where I would always get the discs. We're down to one disc a month because of the Roku player. We used to get like three discs a month, and I would always have like a concert video in that. And I just expected that, well, why not put all of those up on the streaming set? And there's very little music, and a lot of it is not stuff that I'm all that interested in. So I would really like to see that. And I wonder why that's such a problem, because I imagine the major studios don't own the rights to those concerts. So I wonder what the deal – I mean, maybe record companies do, and they're
I was just going to say, I think it has to do with the record companies. What's interesting about that is I'm the exact opposite. I love to own something because I will watch it over and over again. You know, when I'm writing – now, it's completely different from being a musician because – obviously, you're trying to create a song. You're trying to create music. You're trying to write lyrics and write the melody and, you know, write the bridge and all this kind of stuff. So I can imagine that when you're trying to write a song, the last thing you're going to do is sit there and listen to, Billy Joel or I'm trying to think of somebody from Jersey, Bruce Springsteen. Rock out Pink Cadillacs. Because that's going to distract you from writing your song. When I'm writing, I like to have something going in the background. It's almost like white noise for me. And so I will have a DVD going. I especially like when I can have TV shows, because then, you know, I can put the DVD in and it'll run for, you know, 3 hours or more, because I'll get, you know, 4 or 5 episodes of a TV show, an hour long each, blah, blah, blah. So I like to do that. Now, kind of getting back to the piracy thing, one of the things that I think drives piracy is pricing. And I've seen Alpha Waves. I don't know if you follow Airlock Alpha on Twitter. I've seen him or her. I'm not sure if it's a guy or a girl yet. I've seen them bitch people out over complaining about pricing. You know, I love Doctor Who. I love the reboot of Doctor Who. Doctor Who is really expensive to buy on DVD.
Sure.
I have the classic Doctor Who's. I have the Tom Baker stuff because, you know, Tom Baker was my doctor for the very longest time. And, you know, you get essentially what is one episode, but they used to cut it, you know, and they would show like 15 or 20 minutes and then they would break and do a cliffhanger, and then they show another 20 minutes and then break and do a cliffhanger. And they would do these like every Saturday night for a month and a half or something, and that would be a quote-unquote series, you know, kind of run. And it would be all one story. So you get one of those, you're essentially getting like an hour and a half to 2 hours of an episode, and they can be like $25.
Yeah.
If you want the rebooted series, 13 episodes, David Tennant, you're looking at $100.
Yeah. I would never spend that much on something like that, you know.
So when you look at stuff like that, that's what I think drives a lot of the piracy. You know, I've always said I will spend, you know, between $20 and $45 for a season of television, because typically an American season is 22 to 24 episodes. Mm. So you know, that's a really good price.
Sure.
To get all that content, you know, to get a whole year's worth, essentially, of this show. And so I do that all the time. I have Buffy, I have Angel, I have Battlestar Galactica, I have That 70s Show, because I like that one. Mm. I have stuff like Farscape, even though Farscape was incredibly expensive compared to everything else that was out there. But anything with a BBC logo is hugely expensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see that as kind of driving some of this piracy. I don't know. Maybe we've talked about it too much.
Yeah, well, maybe we can move on to some current TV then. We could do that.
Ah, that, dear listener, is what you call a segue.
Yes.
Yes, let's talk about some different TV shows. You've been catching up on Hulu.
I have, yeah.
Have you caught up on Stargate Universe?
Yes, I did. And I was watching Stargate. You know, it's funny. I never watched any of the Stargates before.
Oh, really?
No, I never have. I've been actually. Oh, wow. I've gone back and I've watched most of the first season of SG-1.
Okay.
I'm almost done with that season because a couple of people, Ken Denme of Geek Dad and Z of also of Geek Dad, but also of Hipster Please, they played a couple of my tunes, and on one episode where they played one of my tunes, they were talking about Stargate, and they were saying like, "Hey, did Johnny Nonelio write a Stargate song? He should write a Stargate song." And I'm like, "All right, I should write a Stargate song."
I suggest that it be something about something talked about in the Legends of the Jaffa.
Okay.
Because I think there's actually a drinking game, and every time Teal'c says something along the lines of "I've only heard of that in the Legends of the Jaffa," you're supposed to take a shot.
You know, is the Legends of the Jaffa like a separate series, or is that just
no?
Like the Stargate?
It's okay, within Stargate. So, in other words, you know, we've come across Osiris. You know, this talking about Osiris. Teal'c, do you know anything about Osiris? Only what I have learned in the Legends of the Jaffa.
I gotcha. Yeah. No, I've heard him say that quite a bit. Yeah. But I, between that, them talking about that on the Geek Dad podcast, and then, you know, I'd read Old Man's War, which is one of John Scalzi's books. And John Scalzi is actually I forget what his title is, but he is a creative consultant, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
On Stargate Universe.
I did not know that.
And that's how, I mean, I've been following John Scalzi, and I follow a lot of other people that follow John Scalzi. So when he got hired to be that creative consultant on the show, it was a kind of big news and like, you know, my, you know, part of the Twitter galaxy. And so it was like a lot of buzz, and then I'm like, well, yeah, I should check this out. So, I watched maybe the first four or five episodes on Hulu, like as they were coming out. And
and is this without really knowing the Stargate universe at all?
Yeah, I watched it cold. I'd never watched SG-1 at all. And I'd asked some people, I'm like, am I going to be able to follow this? And most people were like, yeah, in the beginning they do like a little, like, and I was able to follow it fine in terms of the history of it and everything. I liked it at first, and then I was starting to get bored with it. And I think at the time that it was showing, I was also watching Flash Forward, which we could talk a little bit about. And V had just come out, those first four episodes, and I was getting into the new V as well. And it just sort of something, I didn't have enough time to watch them all, and I sort of got behind on Stargate Universe. And then the next thing I know, when I went and I looked, I sort of stopped at around episode five, I guess. And then like the five episodes after that were already like expired on Hulu. So I couldn't watch them.
And I hate that.
Yeah. And then, so then anyway, I went back and I watched, like I said, most of season one of SG-1. And when I was doing that the other day, I was going to watch an episode, and I looked, and they put all the Stargate universes back up on Hulu. I guess there's a new episode coming out this week, I guess.
Actually, April 2nd.
April 2nd, so in 2 weeks. Yes. So I'm like, oh, I'll catch up. And I think I didn't intentionally bail on it to begin with. It was just sort of like I kind of ran out of time. And the first five episodes are a little slow, I think. I think it gets better the last half of the first half of the first season, because the first couple of seasons are like, we need water.
Yes.
And then they go to, and yes, then we need air. And then it's like, yes, oh, it's going to be every episode where they just go and get this. And by episode,
actually, they cut out the episode where the girls say we need tampons. And I just lost half our listenership.
Yeah. Way to go. but
I'm going to pay for that.
Yeah, you really are. But anyway, it gets much better, I think, when they – I forget what episode it starts. It's where they're sort of like – they sort of find like a kino of them in the future,
yes,
on a planet.
Yes.
And like that was really good. And I think that sort of starts when it starts getting good. And so I watched, I think, the four from there. So I'm all caught up on it right now.
Did you notice the shuttlecraft?
Yes. Yeah, and I love
what
that they did that. And
the hell?
Well, I think that's awesome, and I think that's where – and I have no idea because Scalzi is not writing the episodes.
Right, no.
But his function, from what I understand from reading his blog and what he's written and a little bit of what Lou Anders, I think, has written a little bit about it too, because Lou has a pretty good association with Joseph Malozzi, who is the one of the creative guys on Stargate, one of the producers or something.
Yes.
And you know, essentially what Scalzi was brought in to do was to sort of keep focus on the overall arc of the story.
Yes. yeah.
Because a lot of what Battlestar Galactica was criticized for was that they'd have all of these good, and I love Battlestar Galactica, and I liked the way it ended and everything.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, yeah, well, let's save that because that's a whole episode to itself.
Oh, yeah. If we talk about Caprica, we're talking about that.
Yeah, but yes. Anyway, the you know what I think Battlestar was criticized for was that they had all these great sort of plot threads and things like that. And then they would sort of write themselves into a corner and did not really get out of it in a wholly satisfying way.
Right.
And what Scalzi was sort of brought in to do was to make sure, like sort of ask as the writers were writing, all right, if you do this, you know, you're not
sure
going to be able to do this later. And if you want to do this later, maybe start introducing it here. So I think he sort of like, because he's a novelist, you know, he is sort of trying to keep like the big picture in mind. And so to me, that shuttle being just sort of, you know,
there to drive me up a wall.
But that's awesome. Cause you now, if they do nothing with it, then it's,
I'm going to kick somebody's butt.
Then it's crap. But yeah. I'm sure that's going to be addressed at some point, whether it's this season. See, what I would, I mean, I hope it lasts for a couple of seasons because what I think would be awesome.
Oh, it will. It will.
It's if they just like don't even mention it again for two seasons or something. Just like, remember that shuttle back in season one? Well, this is what it did.
To John Scalzi and anyone else involved with Stargate Universe who's listening to this podcast right now, please ignore John.
Yeah, resolve it this season. Is that what you're saying?
I have to know. Yeah, I mean, I even put it out on Twitter. Now, what he's doing is, I mean, it's not the first time that someone has done this. I don't know if you're aware. Harlan Ellison was the creative consultant on Babylon 5.
I did not know that.
And he had a similar role. Now, I want to say 95% of the Babylon 5 episodes were written by J. Michael Straczynski, whose last name is difficult to pronounce. But Harlan Ellison was the consultant on the show to do essentially what you're talking about, which is to keep them on track and kind of keep them. And really, I think it's more along the lines of you have so many plot threads, so many different things kind of out there dangling around. You got to tie them up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what they're doing and keeping them on course. Now, I am a fan of Stargate from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I loved the movie. I thought the movie was fantastic. I don't know if you've ever seen that with.
I did see the movie. James Spader
mm-hmm. and Kurt Russell. Yeah, so we had Snake Plissken mm-hmm. in there, and the first four seasons, I want to say, of Stargate SG-1 were on Showtime.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's why you have boobs in the pilot episode.
Yes. Well, I figured that makes sense now.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I felt like SG-1 hit their stride. They really started to knock them out of the park in the second and third seasons. That's when they really started to kind of pick up. So I know you've gone through the first season. I felt like the first season they were still trying to figure out what the hell they were going to do. But as Richard Dean Anderson became more involved and they kind of started letting him be him, the humor started coming through and it started really getting to be a good show. So, you know, season 2, season 3, season 4, season 5, when they jumped to Sci-Fi, or the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi, they really started to hit their stride and do well. Now, I've been a fan of SG-1. I was a fan of Atlantis. I was really sad to see Atlantis go because I felt like they were finally hitting their stride in the fifth season. And, I mean, the ratings were there. They just decided that they wanted to go in a different direction, and that was Universe. Mm-hmm. What I'm curious is if anybody else has picked up on the parallels, and you're going to laugh, the parallels between the different Stargate TV shows and the different Star Trek TV shows.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
You had Star Trek The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
Flagship show built really on the previous mythology. So... you had, you know, the original Star Trek, and then you had the movies, and then you had Star Trek The Next Generation. And they finally kind of expanded and became their own entity, just like Stargate SG-1, which ran for 10 seasons, was based on a movie. And in the first season, they were kind of still tied to that, and then they started, you know, feeling it out a little bit, and they stretched and became their own show. Then you had Deep Space Nine. And with Deep Space Nine, you know, the producers said, let's get away from the flagship show. Let's get away from the adventure every week on a ship. And let's go and build a city out, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, really far away, and full of alien technology and new threats and new adversaries and new races that we've never seen before. Boom, Stargate Atlantis. Yeah. Similar concept.
Yeah, sure.
Then, again, you got Voyager. So now they're sitting there and they're going, you know, we've spun off successfully from Next Generation. We've got Deep Space Nine. But we didn't get far enough away from the concept. So let's take these people that we kind of know, these Starfleet people, and let's cast them way the hell out in the middle of the universe somewhere, far, far away, where it's impossible for them to go home. And let's trap them there and see how they deal with the whole... you're stranded out in the middle of the universe and you can't communicate with home and you can't do this, you can't do that, and you're just trying to survive, and we're going to sit back and count how many torpedoes you use.
Yeah.
Similar.
Yeah, I think similar. I think it's a good parallel, one that I hadn't really thought of. So,
well, of course not. Well, you don't have my brain.
I don't. No.
My brain thinks about these things. Anyway, Universe is coming back. I can't wait for it. I'm very excited. It's definitely, I think, a different show mm-hmm. from SG-1. SG-1 was very adventurous. It was an adventure show. Mm-hmm. Atlantis used the same model, and they just kind of took it to a different galaxy. You had the heroic leader of the team. You had the alien on the team who was a warrior. In this case, you had two in Atlantis. And then you had the super uber smart science person. Mm-hmm. With Universe, they took the super uber smart science person and they took away the humor.
Yeah.
And they kind of made him one lab accident away from a supervillain.
Right.
And I think, you know, he's definitely doing some funky stuff, and we're not going to know all the funky stuff that he's doing until that show comes back, and it needs to come back now instead of on April 2nd.
Yeah.
But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, it's you know, one of the things, and I know we had some other TV talk planned.
We have time. We can talk about it.
Well, yeah, well, that's you know, because I know we're kind of getting a little long on time here. But one of the things that I did want to bring up, which I thought was funny, I kind of realized this, but in watching Caprica and Stargate Universe over the past week, I realized that, you know, two really good actors, two of the, probably the best actors in science fiction shows currently running were the two stars of La Bamba. So I don't know if you picked up on that, but I'm
yes.
Like, wow.
Yes.
Look at that. That's Lou Diamond Phillips and Isai Morales, both and both really kind of playing pretty interesting roles, I think. And I don't know, that sort of, that really struck me as funny for some reason. I'm not really sure why, but
yeah. So do you like Caprica?
I do like it. I think it's kind of, it's different than I thought it would be. And I like where it's going. Because I did like, one of the things that I did like about the original, the reboot of Battlestar Galactica was that I did like all of the sort of mythology of it and the sort of religious overtones. I liked that. And that's really being, you know, played up quite a bit on Caprica. And I do like that aspect of it. I mean,
I've watched a couple of episodes, only okay. A couple. Mm-hmm. And I had a conversation with my friend Quinn, mm-hmm. Actually on my other podcast. And I was telling him that I did like it, and he kind of chastised me, saying you can't just jump in the middle. You got to start it from the beginning and go through. Mm-hmm. Part of my problem with Caprica is Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
And, you know, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't watched Battlestar Galactica. Do you know there's actually, there's guides out on the internet now that tell you only watch Battlestar Galactica up to a certain episode and then stop if you want to be satisfied with the series?
I'd heard something about that. Yeah, I think I saw that on one of like the blogs that I read this week that they had mentioned that.
So with Battlestar, I started watching it. It was very funny. I remember the original show fondly, like I remember so many other shows from my childhood very fondly. You know, The Dukes of Hazzard, Battlestar. I mean, there's all kinds of shows that I can go through and say, you know, I really remember these shows. I loved them as a kid. If I watch them now, I want to claw my eyes out. Mm-hmm. And I just remember when I first started watching the miniseries, I kept thinking to myself, why the hell didn't they use the music? I really wanted the music. Mm-hmm. You know, the dun 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 dun. And they actually did use it in one little scene. But anyway, when the series came on, I watched it religiously. But the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi does something that bugs the crap out of me, which is they show you a few episodes and then they break for 6 months and then they show you the rest of that season kind of thing. And that has always bothered me. And so when the Battlestar was on, I watched it. I watched the first season. I watched part of the second season. I got really busy. I never knew when it was going to come back on. I stopped watching it. So I ended up catching up to everything all on DVD. Mm-hmm. Watched the final season in real time, watched the final episode, and I was horribly, horribly fracking confused because it's like, okay, there were 13 tribes, but one of those tribes was really Cylons, and they went off and they formed their own planet far away from the 12 colonies. Then they blew up that planet, but five of them came back to the human colonies where humans had recreated Cylons again, and then they sort of got into bed with those Cylons. They made some more human models. There was a big war, but they don't really remember who they were anymore. Now they all think they're human. Then the war comes, and then the Cylons leave, but they leave the original five still with the colonies. But then they come back, and then they have this war, and another war, they destroy all their human masters except for the fleet, and then the fleet kind of comes back and figures out that who the Cylons were in the first place, and And I just, the whole damn thing ended up confusing me. And then they come with Caprica and they're like, oh, and by the way, here's a guy on Caprica that creates the Cylons. And it's like, wait a minute, I thought the Cylons were the 13th tribe, and then they came back, but then I'm just,
well, you know,
confused.
Since you put it that way, I think it's all crap, and I'm going to stop watching. No, you bring up a lot of good points with that. You know, the one
I
thing
didn't
that
I, mean to ruin it for you.
No, you didn't. I'm still enjoying it, but okay. You're right. I mean, I think all of that is interesting, and I was so, and I never watched the only live episode of Battlestar that I ever watched was the finale, because I got into it late, and I was interested when it came out, but I never knew when it was on, and I never even got through an episode. But I did start watching it on DVD, and I binged on it. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah, I did too.
Like in a couple of months, you know, just got through all four seasons, you know. But I even got to the point where I was so into it where I was like listening to all of all the commentary, which were originally podcasts.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, which were just, you know, Ron Moore would pop, you know, the DVD in, and just him and a lot of times it was him and his wife, and then him and some of the other people that worked on the show would talk about it. I mean, they're really interesting. They're kind of worth listening to. But I did find it a little disappointing at points listening to his commentary, because, you know, he essentially said, you know, yeah, we kind of threw this out there, and, you know, we knew we were going to have to figure out how to explain that at some point. You know, he said a lot of that, which yeah. I guess makes total sense looking back at it. But, you know, he had everybody has a different creative process. So I think, you know, you have to follow whatever yours is. And, you know, he, you know, was talking about how at the end, like the whole, you know, they have the opera house dream,
right?
That plays a big part. And when he talks about how, again, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched this stuff, how at the end when, you know, the opera house is supposed to be, you know, the final five up on, you know, the bridge of the Galactica.
Right, the CNC, yeah.
And he's like, you know, and when we finally figured that out, that's what the opera house meant, you know, that was such a great feeling. And yeah. I'm like, really? You put all that in there and you had no idea what you were going to do with it? Like, that like really...
We call that writing by the seat of our pants.
And that's fine. Look, everyone has, like I said, everyone has their own way of doing things. But that seems like such a... That seemed to have such a mythic importance, you know?
Yes.
Like, I would have liked that sort of... I just would have assumed that was... I guess, you know, if you read a lot of novels, and I'm sure like some novelists write this way, right by the seat of their pants too, but, you know, I think typically...
I never have a clue what's going to happen until it happens.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're doing something like that, you probably... Anyway, whatever. But I was disappointed that was like, oh, really? It almost sounded like they just sort of were, you know, because that's... The opera house stuff is introduced fairly early in the series. Like, is it season two that it's introduced? So you're talking like two or three seasons worth of that sort of being a recurring theme. You know, it seems like, you know, through his commentary, it was like they figured it out like on the last writing session of the entire show,
yes.
What that was gonna mean. And,
yes.
and that I found kind of disappointing. I didn't really like that, you know.
I think as far as Caprica is concerned, you know, I struggle because I want to support genre shows on television.
Uh-huh.
But when they piss me off, I have a hard time doing that.
Uh-huh.
And I think for me, at least, what's going to end up happening is what happens a lot for me is that I'm going to wait until the whole damn season is on a DVD, and then I'm going to buy the DVDs and I'm going to watch them all together so I don't have to wait 6 months in between to find out, you know, the end of the cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I'm watching it. I'm pretty invested in it right now. And so I'm enjoying it, and I'm interested to see where they take it. So,
well, then you're going to be happy because that's coming back, I think, also first week in April. So either April 1st or April 2nd, whatever that Friday is.
Yeah, well, it's been showing. It's been, I guess it's going to take a few weeks off here. But,
yeah, that's right. I'm sorry.
That's been running. Like, that's been...
No, they're going off. They're having their final episode soon.
Yeah.
And then they're going to have their little mid-season break is what they call it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of dumb. I wish they would just show it all at once, but what are you going to do?
I agree.
Yeah.
What else did we want to talk about? Music.
A couple of little bit of music that I wanted to mention was I've been listening to King's X quite a bit the past couple of weeks. And King's X, if you don't know, they've been around for a long time, since the 80s, and they're a three-piece, you know, bass, guitar, and drums with three-part vocal harmonies. And they're almost like a metal Beatles. And they had a couple of hits in the late 80s, early 90s. Most notably, they had a song called Over My Head, and It's Love was a big hit. And had a little run. They were like one of these bands that, at least from my opinion, I don't think I'm the only one that has this feeling about them, one of those, they really should have been bigger than they were.
Yes.
They really should have, because if you listen to the music and you analyze what they have going on, it's really kind of a shame that now the thing is they've continued to put out albums, you know. But I mean, I'm not even talking about today's standards, because today's standards, I think everyone kind of has their own thing going on. But you know, because I don't even know if there are hits anymore outside of, you know, very mainstream sort of top 40. You know, I, as far as the rock hits, I don't even know if that exists, you know. But I was very into them over the course of their first four or five albums. And then I kind of, you know, lost track of them. And for some reason recently, I've kind of been getting into some of the other members. Their guitar player is a guy named Ty Tabor, and I actually got a couple of one of his solo albums a few years back, and I liked that. And I picked up another one through eMusic, which is a service that I use. And
what would you consider his style to be on his solo albums?
His solo albums are a little less metal-y. He has a very there's three singers in the band. Doug Pinnick, who's the bass player, sings most of the lead in King's X, and he's got like a real soulful, like R&B kind of voice. And Ty Tabor, who's the guitar player, has a very John Lennon-esque voice. And it's striking actually how similar his voice is to John Lennon. And the drummer has a good voice too, although he doesn't really sing lead on much. He usually just sort of chimes in with that third harmony.
I'm a Beatles freak.
Sure.
So that's why you mentioned John Lennon, and I have to say something. So
of course, but you would like the Ty Tabor solo records, and King's X has a much heavier kind of vibe. There's a lot of like really, you know, heavy riffs and stuff. So it's kind of an interesting mix, because you have these sort of heavy, almost grungy kind of riffs, okay, and then these like three part vocal harmonies on top of it. So it's a real interesting mix. But I found myself like discovering that, like, oh, like they didn't just stop putting albums out in 1994. They actually kept putting an album out every 2 years.
Oh, wow.
So I had like, you know, 15 years worth of albums.
Don't you love that?
I did. And it's been great. And that's what I'm going through now. So I've like picked up about three or four of them, and, really good, like all very consistent, and none of them are bad, and they all sound good. So King's X, definitely check out, especially if you love, you know, three-part harmony and heavy guitar riffs. You definitely dig it.
We talked about last week that I like to read books that are part of a series.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel the same way about music. You know, I hate it when I find something that I really, really like, and, you know, the band broke up and they're never recording anything again, and they only have the one album.
Mm-hmm.
That absolutely sucks. I hate that.
No, if you get into King's X, there's plenty there. And then they all, like I said, Ty Tabor's got about three or four solo albums. I think Doug Pinnick, the other singer, has three or four. Plus, Ty Tabor especially has all these side projects that he's done. So he had a band called Platypus with a couple of the guys from Dream Theater, and a band called the Jelly Jam, which was a couple of the other guys. So in addition to the King's X albums and the Ty Tabor solo albums and all of his side projects, I mean, there's probably like 20 albums out there that you can check out. So
now I'm going to find a clip of Tom Baker saying Jelly Baby.
Would you like a Jelly Baby?
Shut up!
simple enough. Thank you would have been sufficient.
Now, you don't have an iPhone.
I do not.
Actually, that wasn't a question. I was just rubbing it in.
Okay.
My mom started watching a show called Life Unexpected.
Sounds familiar.
And I caught the theme song for the show, and I went, wait, what the heck is that? And so on my iPhone, I have an app called Shazam.
Right. I'm familiar, yeah.
And so I use that to check out this, because it was this like an acoustic bass, you know, kind of playing a bass line, and then this girl comes on and starts singing, and I'm like, well, what the hell is this song? You know, I kind of wanted to know what it was. So I got Shazam out, and I did what do they call it? They don't call it sampling, they call it something else. Anyway, I hit the button, and the song comes on, and it kind of analyzes it, and it sends it out to the server and does this. And it came back that it was Rain Perry. Now, have you ever heard of Rain Perry?
I have not.
I ended up going to iTunes and buying the CD, which is called Cinder Block Bookshelves, I think. Cinder Block Bookshelves. And I like it. It's a little bit different. It's a female singer. It's singer-songwriter kind of stuff. But I like her lyrics, and I like some of, you know, she has this song that's all about, and you're going to love this. It's all about the fact that she's a girl and she can play guitar. Therefore, mm-hmm. the boys let her into their room to talk to her about music.
Mm-hmm.
So the lyrics are kind of like, you know, I'm in a different world because I'm in the boys' room and they didn't bring me in here, you know, for anything frisky. Mm-hmm. They brought me in here because they actually accept me because I can play guitar.
It's interesting. I'll definitely check that out. That's great. Does she just have the one album then? Or
No, she actually had a couple others, but that's the one that I picked up. And the actual song was called Beautiful Tree.
Oh, well, I will definitely look into that. I'll see if she's on eMusic. I have an eMusic subscription, so you know, maybe I'll pick up a couple of her tracks and check that out.
Do you have any other music for us?
I think we'll leave it at that for this week then.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's see, did we have, there was one other thing I did want to throw out there for you. After last week when you were talking about Haze and that you did not like it.
Yes.
I pushed through on the weekend and I got about halfway through the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Ellie Modisette. You know, I love his books. I am not loving this one.
Yeah. I mean, finish it up, but I tell you, I was really, like I said, I never read any of his stuff before, and I didn't think it went anywhere. Like, you know, if you feel like it's not going anywhere, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it feels like a reckless book. I'm from Canada, eh? Uh-huh. It feels like one of the reckless books, Recluse, which is the island. I suck at this. I have a voice that's not made for podcasting. Anyway, it feels like one of those books in that it has a similar narrative. You know, it's the guy going out and he's constantly talking to people and they're constantly telling him stuff, but he has to figure everything out for himself. But unlike the Recluse books, it's incredibly boring.
I felt like that whole book was him like eating lunch and dinner.
Yes.
Like, do you feel like the whole book is them? We met at this restaurant and then we ate.
And I haven't figured out yet, is he slamming Mormons or is he not slamming Mormons?
I don't know, but it was not very, like, I kept, at one point, I guess about halfway through, I'm like, I don't think this is going to go anywhere. And I kept hoping maybe there's going to be some crazy twist at the end. And there wasn't. I mean, not
to woo-hoo, not spoil the joy.
But, you know. It's, hey, you know what? Like, that dude's written a lot of books, and I'm sure a lot of them are really good. And
he puts out like three a year.
So, you know what? They can't all be gems, you know? Like, you know, they, you know, hey, everyone gets a mulligan. Unfortunately, that's the only book I've read of his. So it's sort of maybe like, I'll check out some other authors first before I check out any more by him, you know?
You know what? I tell you what, I've never read any of his straight science fiction before. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I will again.
Yeah.
But I still recommend to you The Soprano Sorceress.
Yeah, I saw that at the library a couple weeks back, and I was like this close to taking it out. And that's definitely a series I will definitely check
music,
out.
Music is magic, and you can't just play music. You have to be on pitch.
Yeah.
In order to do it right, because if you're not, you can screw everything up.
Did you read the whole series?
I did.
If you liked that, and I haven't read that one, but one of the things that actually got me into fantasy was Elizabeth Hayden's Rhapsody trilogy, which I guess there's been more books than that at this point. But
did I buy that? Boy, that sure sounds familiar.
It's like Rhapsody, Prophecy, and I can't think of the name of all three, the third one.
Destiny, I'll have to check it out.
That's very music and magic, and that's how I got into it. And when I was like searching for stuff to read, I was reading just a lot of music books, and that was sort of like the first big fantasy thing that I read. And that's going back about 10 years now, I guess. And I loved it, and I think it really a cool magic, just a great story. Characters really good, but that's really good. That's my one of my favorite. Okay. Fantasy series. So definitely, I don't know what she's doing now, Elizabeth Hayden. I haven't really heard anything about her, but there's the original trilogy, and then I think there's like two or three other books in that world that are sort of standalones.
And a topic for another's time is going to be, does anybody ever write a book that isn't part of a series anymore? I think they're all trilogies or duologies. Or, in the case of someone like George R. R. Martin or Robert Jordan, it's book one in a series of 214.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Which is amusing because my mom is reading Robert Jordan right now. she got interested in the series, and so she's like on book six or seven or something like that. But anyway, I think that we have chatted quite a bit today.
Yes.
I think we're probably done.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, because you just won't shut up, we have tons of stuff to talk about next week.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. It's good that we're not exhausting everything in the first episode. So
it is. It is. It
shows that we keep doing this every week, so that's good.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I'm just curious. I'm curious to know if anybody is going to be able to actually hear the cat that is caterwauling outside my door right now. If that's coming through on my mic.
I haven't heard anything, so.
So episode two, I think we're going to call done. Definitely check back with us next week because we are going to have another episode. Why don't you pimp your stuff?
Sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JohnAnealio, JohnAnealio. You can check out my blog, which is scifisongs.blogspot.com, because I still have not gotten around. I own johnanelio.com, and yeah. I'm afraid of doing the transfer over to that. I'm afraid I'm going to lose all my subscribers, although I heard that that doesn't happen when you do that, so I should just switch it over. But as of now, it's scifisongs.blogspot.com. If you put John Anelio into Google, you'll find all my stuff. I do have an album out called Sci-Fi Songs, which you can find on iTunes.
Yep.
And on CD Baby, and now on Amazon MP3.
Millennium Falcon for Christmas.
Yeah, and you can also find, in addition to the 11 songs that are on that CD, I have like 20 other songs or something that you
can
get.
Blue Lego.
Yes, that's the new one. You can get that for free right now. So just go to scifisongs.blogspot.com and download it to your little heart's content.
And when are we looking at another Interstellar jukebox?
You know what? I really liked doing that.
As I put you on the spot.
Yeah, you know what? That was way more work than I thought it would be. And I didn't write a word in those posts, but like putting that together was – and I want to keep doing it because I like the whole idea of community. And everyone that participated like wrote great stuff, and it was really fun to interact. But I thought I was going to do those like every couple of weeks or once a month, and I'm like, that was a lot of work. And it's like sort of like, well, I decided you know what? I should really just be concentrating on writing and recording these songs. Like that's what I do. But I would like to do this, but I don't have plans to do another one right now.
Gotcha.
Because it was like – it was a lot of work.
I keep watching my inbox. I'm like, when am I going to get another email from John?
No, I'm not snubbing you. I haven't sent out to anybody. So,
gotcha. And let's pimp my stuff for a second. I have the blog, which is over at atfmb.com. That does stand for All Things From My Brain, and that's because I can't concentrate on any one topic for any length of time. I also have the Twitter feed, twitter.com/ATFMB. Go there, follow me, and help me win the secret war of followers against John Anelio that he doesn't know about. What else? Oh, I also have the Evermist. I don't know if you've – have you checked out Evermist?
I read the first chapter. I keep meaning to read the rest of it, but I did like the first chapter.
So. I have actually a lot of people reading it, which is kind of cool. That's at atfmb.com/Evermist. Evermist. And you do have to do the capital for some strange, odd, and or mystical reason. But that's where all my stuff is online, so go check that out. We also have the website for the podcast, which is functionalnerds.com. Whether or not we ever actually do anything else on that site is totally up to John, and he is completely undecisive on it.
Yeah, I don't have a decision at this time, Patrick, so...
All right, so I think that's it for us. Thanks for listening, and check back next week.